Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Today, I'm defending America's national security by placing tariffs on foreign imports of steel and aluminum. We will have a 25% tariff on foreign steel and a 10% tariff on foreign aluminum when the product comes across our borders.
It's obviously bad policy, we all think, but we can disagree on that with the president. He thinks it's good policy, but the politics of it are awful for Republicans. I mean, we have a conducive tax and regulatory environment now, so the economy looks good going ahead. That could all be reversed with a trade war.
I don't think I've ever really seen that a statewide action could have the support even among the teacher ranks to be successful, but I'm really questioning that right now. I think teachers have seen a highly publicized teacher crisis for three, if not 4 years, and they've seen nothing done about it.
Joining us to talk about teachers and education funding in Arizona, as well as President Trump's taste for tariffs, our political analyst and former legislative leader, Chris Hurstam, and CEO of High Ground Public Affairs, Chuck Coughlin. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Hey,
thanks for having us.
Chris, let me start with you on education. There was a Wear Red for Education in Arizona Day. West Virginia teacher strike ended. There was talk that maybe teachers in Arizona might consider striking. Where are you at on that?
I think, you know, the Arizona labor environment is very different. We're a right-to-work state, and the union clout is not does not exist in Arizona like it does perhaps in other states, particularly back east. But I do believe that there is a growing sentiment amongst the public that teachers have been crushed from a salary standpoint for a long time, and that the politicians at the state capitol, Republican politicians that have controlled the joint for quite a while, that they've really not done enough to assist them. And then when you see the statistics and it shows that teacher salaries are dead last in America today, and nobody steps up to dramatically increase those salaries, the public tends to be thinking, and I run into people all the time that basically say, you know, if the teachers don't get some assistance soon, they should think about doing what happened in West Virginia. So I think we would be a couple of years maybe away from that if nothing's done, but I don't think we're there yet.
Now, Chuck, Joe Thomas of the Arizona Education Association played just a little clip from Joe talking, saying that he thinks a majority of teachers feel like really nothing has been done, even though Governor Ducey has said there is. Now, of course, that can be disputed, but has enough been done, and has the little amount been done where teachers might actually consider a walkout?
No, I think Chris is right. I think we're still, as a state, trailing, whether you measure it, 48, 49, 50 in teacher pay. And the anxiety in the community, I mean, there's stories of teachers traveling to New Mexico to teach there for $15,000 more a year. So they have done things. Governor Ducey and the legislature has done modest proposals here. The big opportunity is the 301 extension, which is the six-tenths of a cent sales tax that is due to expire in 2020. There's been discussions with the Save Our Schools group, which has been active politically here, about potentially renewing that and adding a four-tenths sales tax to that, and maybe putting that on the ballot this fall. So I think there's room. I think the public supports the notion of improving teacher pay.
I just want to add, though, that when we talk about extending Prop 301 like it would be some major accomplishment and a benefit to teachers and on our public education system, all that does is maintain the status quo. We're dead last right now. That's the status quo. So that's the least we have to do just to maintain the status quo. We need to generate, you know, $1 billion in new money just to get us back to where we were 10 years ago before the recession. So we got to think big here. And in my opinion, the Republicans at the state capitol, in no way do they think big on public education.
Chuck, there's been some talk about maybe in addition to extending Prop 301, expanding it, making it a dollar or a full penny or some amount more than that. Is there an amount that by itself would get Arizona where it needs to be as far as the ability to pay teachers? Do lawmakers also have to be part of that in some way?
Yeah, I think, there is, as Chris says, there's a desire to go out and do more. And there's been a discussion about adding a four-tenths of a cent sales tax. We've done some data collection on that on behalf of the Save Our Schools group. That shows a high degree of, you know, in the high 60s on support.
For a full penny.
For a full penny, and reforming some of the 301 money. For listeners, that was the 0.6 of a sales tax that Jane Hull passed in during her governorship. And so it'd be go to a full penny and dedicating that 0.4 to a specific teacher pay package exclusively. That tests very well. You know, there's arguments that people will say, well, that's not enough. But I think getting that, maybe positioning that in this election cycle, 301, that tax is due to expire in 2020. And there's some brinksmanship going on with folks about how to negotiate that, whether you walk it up to the line and then do it or whether you do it now. And I think the Save Our Schools group is looking at that. And there's some groups out there that the voters of Arizona may see something this fall.
Chris, you want to jump in on that?
It's raw politics, really. It's Governor Ducey, who's on the ballot for re-election, and he doesn't want a education initiative on the ballot that will increase the turnout of pro-traditional public education schools, because those people will tend to vote against him.
Has Governor Ducey, though, not – I'm not saying he goes outside his comfort zone all that often, but hasn't he shown the ability to play both sides of this issue when it comes down to Prop 123? Couldn't he find a way to support Prop 301 without being a leader on Prop 301?
Yeah, it would. Well, A, it's not a tax increase if you just do 301. And I think there's been discussions about that. I know there's legislative leaders, Kate Brophy McGee, Senator Worsley from the East Valley have been talking about, and there's been bills introduced just to extend the 301 tax for another 20 years that have a majority of supporters in the legislature. And that could be done legislatively. That could be done. And there's some reforms there that could bring some money that's no longer needed in that old 301 package forward that would improve particularly teacher pay. Then the question is, Chris and others will say, well, is that enough? You know, is that enough to do? Well, I think it's – and the politics of this moment may create an opportunity down there this time. Well, there's – as we've seen in the legislature, Chris is a former legislator. I've worked for a couple of governors. There's always leverage at budget time, you know. And so what do I want? What do you want? What am I willing to give? That I could see something maybe working that way.
All the governor has to do is say to the legislature, his fellow Republicans that control the legislature, is simply, I'm not going to sign a budget without the extension of Prop 301 first. Two-thirds vote, give it to me.
But the governor's chief of staff, who I've talked to, said, you know, we want to use that to compel activity in the next cycle. We want to use that cliff to compel real deep thinking about what we need to do.
The governor has had almost 4 years now of deep thinking opportunity, and it just hasn't happened. Time is up. The teachers deserve a hefty increase now.
How much do teachers need to get? We're not even talking about being like top 10 states in the country. I mean, I think that is probably unrealistic at this point, given the hole that the state had been dug into. To get to a point where teachers aren't leaving in droves and aren't talking about striking and aren't feeling the need to maybe rally to the extent that they are, what has to happen?
Well, we need enough money generated and put into the pipeline permanently so that I think the estimate I've seen is you can raise teacher salaries if it's dedicated just to that. For about $200 million, you can raise them 10%.
Would that be enough?
It would be a start. It would be a start if you were to say 10% immediately and maybe another 5% after that phased in. But you'd have to generate $300, $400 million. You could do that with a tax proposal that gets the job done.
We're about $1 billion behind where we were in pre-recession 08 levels. So to get back there is one thing. And then to add additional revenues beyond that, and then how to do that to incentivize teacher pay in healthy ways. Those are big lifts. That's a big lift. But I think there's discussions. The Save Our Schools organization has been in conversations about said ideas to extend the 301 and maybe add a 0.4 of a sales tax. I think I've heard many discussions about, you know, wouldn't it be more thoughtful from an economic standpoint, instead of being so reliant on the sales tax, to maybe adopt a more thoughtful statewide property tax that may you could count on as a stable force over time that would also be part of the matrix?
That's Chuck Coughlin. Also here is Chris Hurstam. I'm Steve Goldstein with Mark Brody. We're in the midst of our Friday NewsCap segment, which continues after this. Good morning. It's the show on 91.5. We're in the midst of our Friday NewsCap in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Also joining us, political analyst and former legislative leader Chris Hurstam and CEO of High Ground Public Affairs, Chuck Coughlin. Chuck, let's move to President Trump's taste for tariffs, as it were. There have been a lot of issues, it seems, that Republicans and Democrats have made strange bedfellows on certain issues related to the president. This seems like another one where a lot of people are real concerned about this, except the president and some of his inner circle. What do you make of it?
Well, the president is an extraordinary political figure, and there's a special election apparently in Pennsylvania and some of these states which were key to his presidential victory last time. There's some elections coming up in this cycle that are important to him, and I think he's directly appealing to a constituency right now in real time that are looking at ballots in this cycle. And so whether this is, you know, high drama, I think he loves high drama. He loves playing that game. And so, but he's lost his trade representative now. I mean, we could argue the economic merits of this till we come home. But inherently, the president is a deeply political figure. And I sense that this is a short-term play.
Now, Chris, Jeff Flake, of course, has been one of the president's top critics. And he was on Morning Joe the other day. And one of the hosts actually said to him, do you think you're the best person to be trying to convince the president to go otherwise on this? But I imagine there are a lot of other people who are stronger when it comes to convincing him. Is this going to be a done deal? Is this going to mess with NAFTA? What do you think?
Oh, I think the governor wants to mess with NAFTA.
President.
I mean the president. He, you know, has basically said, maybe I'll make exceptions for Canada and Mexico, which, of course, makes a lot of sense if you're going to go down this route. But he wants to leverage those exceptions to try to get a sweeter deal with them on NAFTA. If I was Canada and Mexico, I'd tell him to take a hike. I wouldn't allow him to use that kind of leverage. This is a typical Trump chaotic situation with no intellectual depth at all. And no wonder Flake and McCain are against him. But so is Paul Ryan. I mean, so are most of the mainstream Republican, which are normally very conservative in Washington. So he's pushing against it. I thought it was interesting that Kyrsten Sinema, running for the U.S. Senate here in Arizona, immediately came out against the tariffs, very strong in her tweets. I'm still waiting to hear where Martha McSally is. She seems to always delays her reaction. It'll be interesting to see what stand she takes, because she's trying to embrace Donald Trump right now. So it will affect local politics here in Arizona as well.
Well, and Chuck, you mentioned that a special election in Pennsylvania, some other states that were important to the president's win. How different do the candidates in those races maybe talk about this than candidates in Arizona, which is not a steel or aluminum producing place?
No, we're a NAFTA benefit state. I mean, we have a governor back dating to my former boss, Governor Symington, who created the Arizona-Mexico Commission. You know, this state looks at that issue. Mexico's our largest trading partner. It's our growth. It's our growth opportunity. It also legitimately presents a lot of security concerns with narco drug trafficking, human smuggling that we've all experienced over time. I think this electorate, the Arizona electorate, is probably the most mature electorate, if there is such a thing, at dealing and understanding the complexities of these issues. But what the president's doing right now is using this in a deeply political way, that's probably not shocking to a lot of people, to get election results that he wants out of certain parts of the country now that look at these issues very differently.
The one thing that could screw up our recovered economy is a trade war, and that's what he's done. Trump has set the table for a trade war, and here in Arizona, as Chuck pointed out, with our close relationship with Mexico, that's a nightmare. Mm-hmm.
So earlier this week, Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton, yes, he is still the mayor, gave his final State of the City address and, of course, pointed out many of the things he's done well, or at least contributed to. Talked about how Phoenix was doing when he took over, how Phoenix is doing now. So, Chris, was this a campaign speech for his congressional run?
Sure it was. This guy is rolling very well. I mean, he's got the CD9 race wrapped up. This is a district.
You mean just the nomination or the
just
entire
district? Everything, okay. In my opinion. Because, you know, this is, everybody says it's a competitive district. It's really not. I mean, Hillary Clinton won the district by 16 points, for Pete's sakes. Sinema likes to say she always won in this competitive district, but it really isn't that competitive. And Stanton's rolling, and he's just staying mayor for as long as possible because it's a great forum for him. It was a great speech. It was a great 40-minute speech that reviewed his entire legacy of economic development.
There's a reason he's staying mayor.
It's because
he doesn't want to have the election cycle in this election cycle. So I deeply understand the motivations there is that the election, so listeners understand, the voting of the mayor's race is contingent upon when he resigns. If he resigns somewhere time before April 28th and goes full time into this campaign mode, the election would be in August, which is a heavily contested Republican primary with a heavily, you know, a very looked at Republican seat. Republicans will be turning out there, and the runoff for the mayor's race would be there, and the general would be in November. If he waits till after 28th, the initial election will be in November, a high turnout election, and then a small general election with the runoff candidates, whoever survives in March. So he's smart from his perspective to wait.
But you know, I understand there are Democrats running for office in Arizona right now who shall remain nameless that are actually encouraging him to leave before April 28th because they would rather have their primaries
in August. At Durant's. That's not happening.
I'm just saying there's a pull and a tug.
You take it?
There's a pull and a tug, you know, for within the Democratic Party, depending on which candidate is running for governor, et cetera.
Chuck, do you agree with Chris's assessment that Stanton, when he eventually goes full-time into the congressional race, basically has it wrapped up?
You know, there's the Republican, there's a contested Republican field. There's Mr. Ferrara, a veteran, has raised a considerable amount of money. He has a very good narrative in the race. He's a credible candidate. You look at that district, it is a traditional Democratic district. I think the only Republican ever to win in 9 since it's been created was John McCain, who beat his Democratic opponent last time by 2 points. Hillary beat Trump in that district by, I think, 16. It's my district. I live there. It's Tempe for those, you know, it's Tempe, Ahwatukee, North Central, Phoenix, Arcadia area. It's a bit of a wealthy Republican district that swings. The registration's Republican, but it performs more Democrat.
Guys, in our last minute or so, and Chuck, I'll start with you on this one. We just heard this morning that a PAC supporting Kelly Ward, Senate candidate in the GOP primary, received $500,000 from a Donald Trump supporter. Does that make her any more relevant as she takes on McSally and Arpaio?
Oh, I think so. You have to think so. With Republican primary politics, it's about money and message, and this will be a race for, I mean, all of us consider, you know, both of them are not really well known. I mean, McSally's name ID is not great. She's never run statewide. Ward has the ability to galvanize the hardcore right. Depending on turnout, that could be a challenge. But I think you'd suspect that, if I was betting right now, I'd say Martha McSally will prevail. But every more money that's in the race for Ward, we all thought at the end that her money would dry up. That's not happening.
In a weird sort of way, it helps Martha McSally because if it makes if Kelly Ward gets another $500,000 to spend and compete with Joe Arpaio, that could allow an opening more for Martha
the
McSally.
The elephant in the room, Joe Arpaio. So he's still in the race, and so that's going to be a challenge.
And Sinema's rooting for him, too.
Yes.
Political analyst, former legislative leader Chris Hurstam, and CEO of High Ground Public Affairs, Chuck Coughlin. Thanks for joining us on the Newscap, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, guys.
And the show continues. You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at the show@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.